This is Colourful Radio.
We're paying quite a bit of Bob Marley during this hour. That track has so much things to say because we have a special guest, the first female Attorney General ever in the history of this country. And of course, that position goes back to, I think, 1315. She used to be Patricia Scotland, QC. I first remember hearing of her in 1991, and the Baroness knows about this story very well. I've told it on a few occasions when my father dragged me down from my room and said, Henry, look at this woman. She's taken silk and she's only 35. That's right. Patricia Scotland QC then went on to become Baroness Scotland of Ashtal. And Baroness, welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much, Henry.
Now, first of all, Ashtal. Now, if it was me, I'd be Baron Bonsall of Brixton. I've bagged that one for myself. I think Juju would be Lady Juju, Baroness Juju of...
Acton.
Of Acton. And it would be Baron Kel-Og.
Well,
Baron
actually,
Toby of...
let me say this to you. I actually am. I have an hereditary title, which I've resigned. I don't accept. I don't regard. You know, I'm actually.
I thought you did.
I was a duke. I gave it up. I've got to declare an interest, Henry. Here,
yes.
I am a Republican, as you know, and all for the abolition of the House of Lords. So I should say this right off. I see the Baroness there. Who, you know, I hope she's prepared for the, you know, a bit of interrogation about the House of Lords and what's the point of it.
Well, that's not the main reason why you came on here. You came on here to tell us about a number of things that are going on, what the role of Attorney General involves and how you're trying to help demystify the law, because there are many people I know who would love to understand more about the law and how it works in this country and haven't got the foggiest until they're at the wrong end of it, which is a great tragedy. But welcome formally again. Why Ashtal, first of all?
Well, firstly, Ashtal is in the county of Oxfordshire.
Uh-huh.
And the thing is, actually, I should just be the Baroness Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of concern because they said, how can you take as a title a whole of a principality?
Uh-huh.
And so I should really... I only had Ashtal in order to make it clear that Scotland's my name,
right,
and not the title.
Oh, I see. Does that mean it's not your personal fiefdom to do with what you would like?
Unfortunately, but you know, if anybody wants to give it to me, that'd be great.
Oh, fantastic.
Ashtal, there is a tiny village in which I live.
Okay. And have the local people there embraced you? Do they say, we're so proud to have you to represent us and put us on the map?
Well, I think what's really great is they're so used to me. I've been there for over 20 years that I'm just their neighbour, which is fantastic.
Excellent. Get away from the hurly-burly of Westminster. You might have heard my colleague Toby Kel-Og saying a moment or two ago, well, what exactly does an Attorney General do? Because we have a Home Secretary, we have a Justice Secretary, stroke Lord Chancellor. Mm-hmm. So what do you actually do?
Well, the Attorney General is the Chief Law Officer and the advisor to the government, to Parliament, to Her Majesty. I'm also the head of all... I supervise and superintend all the prosecutorial authorities in our country. That's mm-hmm. the Crown Prosecution Service, the Revenue and Customs Prosecution Office, and the Serious Fraud Office. But I am independent in that regard. And most importantly, I'm the guardian of the public interest. So I'm the one who stands up and says, this is what the public should do. And so therefore I do things like the unduly lenient sentences. You know,
all right.
When there is a huge concern that whether the sentence got right was right, people can write to me and lawyers can ask me to ask the court to look at these cases again, and I've done a lot of that. So I'm the public's champion when it comes to the rule of law, the guardian of your rule of law.
Uh-huh. And how does that feel? Is that a very, very heavy cross to bear, or do you love the responsibility?
Well, I think it's the best and the best job in the world and the worst job in the world. I think Francis Bacon said, to be the Attorney General is to be in hell. And I don't think much has changed, but it's a fantastic responsibility because it does mean that you get up to an opportunity to speak up for the people of this country whom I absolutely love.
And the people of this country are very, very concerned at the moment, aren't they, about a number of things.
Absolutely.
People are talking about, you know, the government being overmighty, about a surveillance state. We had the G20 recently. We've had cases which I know you can't go into in detail, like Binyam Mohamed. People were worried about torture, a whole range of issues. How do you, on the one hand, advise the government and on the other hand remain independent of them and take the public interest at heart? Because it sounds to me like an almost impossible position.
But I think it's actually a great position in as much as you know, all lawyers have to be independent. There's no point in you telling people what they want to hear. You have to tell them what they need to know. And you have to be robust and courageous, because that is what they need. And the attorney is in exactly the same position. The attorney is there to give independent advice. I'm also one of the criminal justice ministers, along with the Home Secretary and the Lord Chancellor, mm-hmm. Jack Straw. And it's an important opportunity for the independent voice to be heard round that table to make sure the criminal justice system is structured in a way that will meet the needs of people. It is a burden, but it's a huge privilege. And one of the great things you get to do is exactly what you think is right. And that's really special.
What do you think you might have advised the government had you been Attorney General at the time of the Iraq War and you were, you know, you were Lord Goldsmith?
I think I'm very grateful that Lord Goldsmith was the Attorney General at that time. I know that he made his decision with integrity, and it was a difficult decision for any lawyer to have to take, but it was his decision and he did what is right, which is what all you can ask any lawyer to do. And I admire Peter Goldsmith very much indeed. I think he was a great lawyer, and he discharged his duties with distinction.
And how much pressure does an Attorney General come under when having to deal with some very, very difficult decisions that may be in the national interest? You've got the politicians around whom, or you sit around the table from them, of course, at cabinet, and you probably get to know them rather well and get a bit chummy and take tea in wherever barons and baronesses and ministers take tea in the House of Parliament, or the House of Lords, indeed, in your case. And then you've got to stand aside and say, actually, even though this may help you politically, I think that from the point of view of justice, I cannot advise you to do this. So, for example, the Serious Fraud Office inquiry into a major arms deal, BAE Systems, and the whole tricky relationship between ourselves and, of course, the Saudis, which could have involved thousands of jobs, and huge pressure put on the Attorney General, huge political pressure as well from Tony Blair. And the Attorney General, of course it wasn't you at the time, it was Lord Goldsmith, has to stand there and say, well, as far as the law is concerned, this is what I believe.
But I think we need to be very clear that that's what lawyers do all the time. Mm. And in order to have real substance, people have to know that you're not giving them advice because you want them ill. You're giving them the advice because that's how it is.
Yes.
And that there's no issue on this. You've not got an edge. You're not trying to get them into trouble. You're telling them what they need to know. And I don't think I have experienced any of the pressure that you speak of. To act with propriety, attorneys general have to be the salt that gives the flavour. and if the salt has no flavour, then that's a difficulty. And I've spoken to so many of the past attorney generals, and this is an apolitical point of any political complexion, and the thing that you have to have in your attorney is the ability to be rigorous when it comes to the law, apply it without fear or favour, and make sure that that's your independent decision and not anybody else's. It comes with the territory of being a barrister. If you haven't got courage, can't really join our profession.
Uh-huh. And you've been a barrister for some years now, and you took Silk in 1991, as I will forever remember, because it has been seared onto my memory by my father, who'll be listening right now. Perhaps you might say hello to Mr. Bonsoon.
Well, I want to say hello to your father, yes. Henry, and I want to apologise to you for the fact that I have made your life hell.
The last 18 years.
Yeah, and I just want to tell your father, he's done a great job, and you're a fine young man, and therefore he can say that just as I have tried to do things, you've succeeded too.
Thank you very, very much indeed.
Did you say young?
Yes, I'm rather young. A couple of other points for me. I know you guys are very keen to get in as well. I was talking to one civil rights barrister friend of mine who may take Silk, I hope, himself in the next few years. And he was saying, Henry, are you aware that the Attorney General of the United Kingdom and the United States both have African-American or African-Caribbean roots? And that is truly an amazing symbol. Do you pinch yourself sometimes about
this? And I'm very, very much looking forward to seeing Eric Holder on Monday, because there is going to be the first meeting between the new Attorney General, whose family hail, I think, from Barbados, and the United Kingdom's Attorney General, both of whom will share the same hue.
Absolutely tremendous. And of course, President Obama was here recently, and his fantastic First Lady wife, Michelle, I trust you met them. What impression did you get of them?
I think they were really wonderful people. And I think what we hope we will do is to rehabilitate the idea of lawyers. Barack Obama is an excellent lawyer. His wife is a brilliant lawyer. Eric Holder is a fine lawyer. And I think, I hope people think I'm okay.
We think you're okay indeed. And I think the people attending the Minority Lawyers Conference in the next few days will also think the same. Do you have a special message for them? Because I know a number of people out there, solicitors and barristers, some of them really struggling in the current climate. Sometimes a subject of more investigations than you would expect given their proportion in the lawyer fraternity. What are you going to say to them at this particular point in time when so many are going through difficulties?
I think I'm going to say life has always been difficult. There's never a time. And when I came to the bar in 1977, it was said that there was virtually no chance of you succeeding if you were black, if you were female, if you had disability, if your sexual orientation was not that of the norm. And we have come a long way, but there is much more for us to do. And we've got to each take responsibility to take positive action to make the change that we want to see in the world. And we can do this if we do it together. And each of us have got to take concrete steps to make sure that others come into our profession. And there are a number of things that have already been done, but there is more for us to do. I want also to say to them, don't be frightened right now. Be confident, because we are in a global market, and that global market needs diverse skills, mm-hmm. and we have them. We have them. And if we want to serve a global market, the profession has to reflect the communities from which that global market will come. And so we should be in pole position. And if we work together, I think there will be a dramatic opportunity for us to bring about change.
Moving away from your role as Attorney General, just for a moment, if we can, I know a lot of our listeners will want to know about you, the lady, the woman. You were born in Dominica, I believe. You came over when you was 3 years old, is that right?
Almost 3 years.
Okay, and you were one of 12 children.
Absolutely.
So what was your inspiration to work so hard? Where did that all come from?
I think it absolutely came from my parents. I have seven brothers and five girls. There are 12 of us all in all, and I'm my mother and father's 10th child. And what they made clear to all of us is that every single person has a talent, and it doesn't matter what that talent is. You have to identify it, hone it, and then use it for the benefit of other people. And they never compromised on that talent. And they didn't mind what you did, provided you did the best you could. I mean, my father was a totally reasonable man, so that when my brother got 99% for Latin, he went and argued for the other 1%. So he set the standards. My mother and father set standards very high for us, and they saw that the world was changing, that the world was going to be one of technology, and that they wanted their children to be part of that. So they really encouraged us to be scientists. And one of my father's greatest disappointments, and just so that Henry doesn't think he's on his own father's disappointments, is I was supposed to be the physicist.
Oh.
And we've got biochemist, pharmacologist, etc. And I was never going to be a physicist. So he's ended up with a lawyer. But what they did was to help us to understand that the world needs our talent. It needs our passion. It needs our ability. And the thing that causes me huge concern, and actually can make me feel quite sad, is when you look at the fantastic talent our young people have, and they don't understand they've got it. And the world needs their talent. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us to do absolutely everything we can so we can suck that talent out and tell our young people how fantastic they are, and not concentrate simply on those who make mistakes. We've got a brilliant future if we nurture the talent that is within us.
Indeed.
I just want to get back on my hobby horse here. Yesterday in the budget, Alistair Darling mentioned the word fairness, I don't know how many hundreds of times, and I've heard it said the Labour Party is nothing if it's not about fairness. How is it fair that you've never been elected?
Well, I think we have a democracy which has an elected house in the House of Commons. It's very important for us to understand what do we think that the House of Lords does. The House of Lords is a reviewing chamber. It's a chamber which can ask the Commons to think again. It sends things back. But at the end of the day, the elected House, the House of Commons, has the final say. And I think that's the right combination. You'll know that there is an intense debate, and there's been an intense debate as to the shape the House of Lords should have, whether it should be elected, whether it shouldn't be elected, that there's proposals for it to be partially elected, and that has to go through. But the most important thing is to look at the function of what the House of Lords does. Yeah, and it does discharge, I think, a really important function.
That may be. I'm not, you know, but there's lots of bicameral situations, government situations, which I think is the proper word for having two chambers, who managed to get by this. Are you for an elected House of Lords?
I'm for an elected House of Lords if that is what Parliament decides.
Okay. That's a bit of a, you know, Weasley thing to say, isn't it? Because is it true?
I mean, have you ever been compared to a Weasel before?
No, but there's always a first. And, you know,
you're a woman of firsts.
Yeah, and you know, so yes. I always get first, so it's good to have my first experience.
But
right,
let me
here.
Ask you that question, or loyally answer, let me put it that way then. Not that I'm equating weasels and lawyers together, of course.
Oh, dear.
But let me ask you that question. As a matter of principle, do you believe in an elected second? I don't understand why we can't have an elected second.
Can I tell you what I absolutely believe in? I absolutely believe in the primacy of the House of Commons. I think there should be no way of challenging that primacy. And there is a real debate as to if you have an elected House of Lords, whether that impacts adversely on the primacy of the House of Commons. And I am always interested in outcome, not process. And so if an outcome is better, you'll get my absolutely support to change the process to improve the
outcome.
But
how will you know what the outcome is until you've changed the process in the first place?
Well, for me, what's really important is what the House of Lords does. I think it's very, very important that the House of Lords is the second chamber, not the first chamber, that the primacy of the House of Commons is embedded. And I think it's very, very important for us to have rules which operate in such a way to guarantee that. Now, at the moment, the rules that operate in the House of Commons and the House of Lords, if you were to have an elected chamber, would mean that the two houses had equivalent power and one could challenge the other. I think what's absolutely necessary is for us to have a situation where the function of the House of Lords is clear, the primacy of the House of Commons is established, and the process, therefore, through which people are elected or not elected to the House of Lords will have less significance because we would have guaranteed the primacy of the House of Commons. And the big issue between those who've been having this debate is how do you get, for those of us who believe that the House of Commons should have primacy, how do you maintain and guarantee that primacy for the future? And the government's position at the moment, and the Parliament voted on this, the suggestion should be it should be 80% elected in the House of Lords. Now, we have a democracy. Democracy is about debate and agreement and a process, and that process is going on right now. But we could probably talk about the House of Lords, which I didn't think we were going to talk about this morning, for about 59 hours. And if you ask every member of the House of Lords and the House of Commons about this issue, you'll probably get a different answer.
Baroness Scotland, I know we have to let you go in just a moment or two, but I have to embarrass you just as you embarrassed me earlier. I was there at the launch of the Reach report on the 20 role models, and you came on, and in your attempt to be hip, you talked about a couple of R&B artists, one of whom you described as Mary J. Blige, the other one you called Usha.
I said Usha.
Just how did he do that? Firstly, I've been absolutely clear that if anyone ever gave me time to go out and dance, maybe I'd be able to be better at all this stuff. But all they do is make me work. But before I go in, I really, really want to take the opportunity, if I may, just to talk for a second
yes.
about the Attorney General's youth network, which I hope will do a sort of a soft launch today.
Yes, for young people.
For young people. I'm really determined, as part of my role as Attorney General, to encourage every person of talent who wishes to come forward to be a lawyer to have that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I know there are many young people out there who think this is not for me or I could never do that. And I want to make sure they know they can. There are whole opportunities for people who don't really know how to express themselves. So yes. I'm hoping that we'll get the network together. We won't be reinventing the wheel, but all the people who care about young people to be able to plot and plan, to give them more opportunities. So, for instance, debating in schools. Debating takes place in public schools all over
all
the country.
All the time.
But we don't have that culture of debating embedded as well as I think it could be embedded in our state schools. So Debate Mate's going to be working with us to try and do this. I hope maybe I'll get a Attorney General's Challenge Cup for debating.
Well, I'll tell you, there'll be more and more interest now with that very successful programme on BBC
Two.
Is it called Speaker?
Absolutely.
It's pretty good. I saw it last night and the night before. Very good.
Well, since Obama's speech, everybody's more interested.
The return
generally
of oratory.
Absolutely. With oratory, yeah.
But I do think it's important, not just for lawyers, but for all of us to be able to articulate our rights
yes.
and to know our responsibilities. And I want to demystify the law.
Aha.
And so a lot of the work we're going to do, Derbyshire are doing a great project with the Crown Prosecution Service, working with schools, going into schools, teaching them about the criminal justice system. I want young people to know that they are part of the solution, not part of the problem. And that they have a say in the rule of law. So I'm hoping the network will do a lot about that. And I really want to say to all your listeners who are working with me, thank you for what you're doing now. But we can do this. And together we can make a huge difference to our country. And I know that there's talent out there. And I'm relying on that talent to come out because we've all got to be brave and stand together.
So the launch of the Attorney General's Youth Network, is that right?
We're going to do a soft launch today. We're getting some key people together to talk about how we set up the network, mm-hmm. what the projects are going to be, what the sort of opportunities might be. So ideas out there or people who think, I'm doing a fantastic thing, maybe we could be part of the network. We'd be really looking for your help and support. And I hope that by July, we'll be able to have a big launch and an action plan. I'm all about action.
Action.
Very good, Henry.
Thank you very much indeed.
This is Colourful Radio.